Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Innergex Renewable Energy's conference call for the third quarter 2016 results. Bienvenue à la conférence téléphonique des résultats du troisième trimestre de 2016 d'Innergex Énergie Renouvelable. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session for analysts and institutional investors, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Thursday, November 10th, 2016, at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. I will now turn the conference over to Martin Ben-Mouyad, Senior Communications Advisor. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Bonjour, mesdames et messieurs. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm here today with Mr. Michel Letellier, President and CEO of Innergex, and Mr. Jean Perron, Chief Financial Officer. Please note that the presentation will be in English. However, you're welcome to address your questions either in French or in English. Nous vous invitons à poser vos questions également en français. I would also like to point out that journalists are invited to call us afterwards if they wish to address any additional questions. In a minute, Mr. Perron will provide some details on our financial results for the third quarter ended September 30, 2016. Next, Mr. Letellier will provide an overview of our operating activities and outlook. We will then open the Q&A session with both senior executives. The financial statements and the MD&A have been filed on SEDAR and are readily accessible via the Internet. You may also access the press release, financial statements, and the MD&A on the Innergex website in the investor section. During this presentation, we will refer to financial measures such as adjusted EBITDA, free cash flow, and payout ratio that are not recognized measures according to the International Financial Reporting Standards, the IFRS, as they do not have a standardized meaning. Please be advised that this conference call will contain forward-looking information that reflects the corporation's expectations with respect to future results or developments. For explanations concerning the principal assumptions used by the corporation to derive this forward-looking information and the principal risks and uncertainties that could cause actual results to differ materially from those anticipated, I invite you to consult the first pages of the company's MD&A as well as its annual information form. I now turn the conference over to Mr. Perron.
Thank you, Martin. Good morning. The quarterly results for Q3 2016 shows production of 90% of the long-term average, due mainly to below average in the hydroelectric market. For the nine-month period ended September 30, production was 106% of the long-term average, due mainly to above average results in all markets but Ontario and France. Revenues for the quarter were $6.6 million higher than in 2015. This 10% increase is attributable mainly to better results from most of the British Columbia hydroelectric facilities compared with the same period last year, and to the contribution of the recently commissioned or acquired facilities, namely the BC Tweedaway Creek Hydroelectric Facility commissioned in November 2015, the BC Walden North Hydroelectric Facility acquired in February 2016, the 7th French acquisition made in April 2016, and the BC Big Silver Creek Facility commissioned this quarter, which were partly offset by lower revenues from the hydroelectric and wind regimes in Quebec and the hydrologic regime in Ontario. For the nine-month period, revenues were $28.9 million higher than in 2015. This 15% increase is attributable mainly to better results in all hydroelectric markets except Ontario and to the conversion of the recently commissioned or acquired facilities, which were partly offset by lower revenues from the wind regime in Quebec. Adjusted EBITDA for the quarter in the nine-month periods were $2.6 million and $20.8 million higher than for the same period in 2015, respectively, for the reason explained above. Finance costs for the quarter increased by $2.8 million compared to 2015. The increase is due mainly to the French acquisition made last quarter and the interest expense of Tweedaway Creek, Big Silver, and partly offset by the lower inflation compensation interest on the real return bonds attributable to lower inflation during the quarter. For the nine-month period, finance costs increased by $6 million compared to 2015. The increase is mainly due to the conversion made last quarter and the Tweedaway Big Silver facilities and to the higher inflation compensation interest on the real return bonds. For the 3 and 9 month periods, other net revenue stood at $0.2 million and $0.6 million respectively, compared to net expense of $27 million and $120 million in 2015. The significant decrease in other net expense for the quarter and the 9 month period stems mainly from the fact that the corporation realized losses of $27 million and $120 million respectively for the same period last year upon the settlement of the Big Silver Creek, Boulder Creek, Upper Lillooet, and Mesquite Hugeson Brantford contracts at the closing of the project financings. For the 3 and 9 month periods ended September 30, the corporation recognized an unrealized net loss on derivative of $1.2 million and an unrealized net gain of $2.1 million respectively, due mainly to foreign exchange rate swaps and interest rate swaps. For the corresponding period last year, the corporation recognized unrealized net gains on derivatives of $24 million and $79 million respectively, due mainly to the reversal of the unrealized loss accrued to December 31, 2014, upon settlement of the bond forward contracts concurrently with the closing of Boulder Creek operated with Big Silver Creek and Mesquite Hugeson financings. For the period ended September 30, the corporation had no derivative to be settled on closing of project financing, as all the development project financing were put in place in 2015. Excluding the impact of derivatives and the related income taxes on the results, net earnings will have been $1.2 million and $22.7 million respectively for the 3 month and 9 month period, compared to $3.9 million and $17.5 million in 2015. Overall, a below-average third quarter added to a very good first six-month period allowed us to record an excellent nine-month period, mainly due to a very good production in almost all sectors. Our trailing 12-month free cash flow ending on September 30 reached $75.8 million compared to $84.2 million for the same period ending in Q3 2015. This decrease is due mainly to higher cash flows from our operation before realized loss on derivative financial instruments in 2015, which were more than offset by greater scheduled debt principal payments. Our payout ratio stood at 89% compared to 74% in 2015. This negative change is due mainly to the decrease in free cash flow explained and to the higher number of common shares outstanding, mainly due to the issuance of 3.9 million shares under a private placement of common shares and to the derivative, partly offset by the purchase and cancellation of 483,000 shares under the normal course issuer bid. Since the beginning of Q4 2016, our production has overall been above the long-term average, especially for the BC hydro sector. This concludes my review of the results. I'd be happy to answer any question you might have on the call. I now turn it back to Michel.
Good morning, everybody. I guess it, today we have had the time to digest the U.S. election, so a little bit in a better shape than yesterday morning. Just to go back a little bit on our development activities, mainly the construction activities, the MU project, the Mesquite-Hugeson project is advancing very well. We have been producing our first electricity during the commissioning of the wind turbine, so it's advancing well. We need good weather in order to speed up the work, but we should be done by mid-December, better if weather permits. But there's something also that I'd like to stress about the MU project is the fact that we have had a record of 113 Mi'kmaq workers on site, which represent roughly a third of the total workforce. So this is very good for the Mi'kmaq, but it's also showing that if developer and contractor works together with First Nation, it is possible to have a big portion of the worker being First Nation. So I think that this is a good leeway in future development and joint venture throughout Canada with First Nation. It's very important, I think, to make sure that First Nation has some direct work during the construction. Upper Lillooet and Boulder, most of the civil work is done, except for some commissioning and the intake for both power intake. and the last piece of the penstock that is embedded in the boulder tunnel. So everything is advancing very well. We are waiting, we are working for the mechanical commissioning and finalizing the adjustment on the turbine and final commissioning of the automation system. If everything permits, we should be in operation or COD early in Q1 for Pearl Alouette and early Q2 for Boulder. So that would conclude our construction activities for Canada when those two will be built. Again, just to stress out the fact that these development have been a long process, but finally we will have a lower payout ratio next year. I think everybody knows that we're very happy to report that we'll have something around $110-115 million of free cash flow next year. So this is going to be exciting for Innergex. We'll be able to make now our attention on the development. So I'll talk about the development. Now I can assure you that this is going to be our first priority. For us, it is important to make sure that we filled up the pipeline after 2017. We talked about our strategy, international strategy. We said that we were focusing on Mexico, France. U.S. is not necessarily international, although we don't know with Mr. Trump eventually. But and also Canada is showing some interesting development lately. So if I come back to Mexico, we have been busy there participating in the last subasta that ended in September. For people that haven't seen it, it's been very competitive, but we were getting closer and closer to the winning prize, so we're learning quite a bit in Mexico, but we're continuing our effort, but we're prudent in Mexico, considering that competition and the perceived risk that we have in that particular market. But just as a reminder, the average price for the wind was around 3.5 cents US, and solar was even lower in the lower 3.1, 3.2 cents per kilowatt hour. That didn't necessarily include the capacity, so I think that there will be also a future market for capacity that could enhance a little bit that selling price, but it's also a show. And this is positive for renewable energy, that renewable energy is becoming really, really competitive in the marketplace. So especially solar in places like Mexico where you have good sun exposure, this is becoming a reality. Renewable energy in many places are becoming more competitive than other form of electricity. France has been very good for us lately in terms of M&A activities and also early stage development. We are quite focused on France. Matter of fact, we are going to have our first office outside Canada in Q1 being in France. So we'll have an Innergex employee in France early Q1. This is good for us. I think that having some of our employee there will help develop the French market. In the meantime, we have, as you remember, made a small joint venture with a local developer, and we are advancing. We said that we have at least 100 megawatt of portfolio of early stage development. We're continuing developing those and making the study, so we're advancing that portfolio quite on a good pace. We are seeing a lot of small M&A transactions, which makes sense for us because there's maybe less crowded and less competitive compared to bigger process that we can see somewhere else. So we are still focusing on making M&A a creative acquisition. As we mentioned in the past, we're willing also to use the joint venture and partnering with financial institution to enhance our return, and I think we're making good progress on that. Also, if you remember when we announced the first acquisition in France. We also had a letter of intent to acquire the 44 megawatt E.ON project in France after COD. We anticipate that the COD should happen before the end of 2016. So we're getting ready to take over that that project. We have been following the construction, so that's also is helping us understand the lay of the land there for construction. So getting accustomed more and more with all the trades and the execution in France. So it's a good year in terms of getting to know France and getting our boots on the ground. We are also looking in Peru. I forgot about Peru at the beginning. Peru is an interesting country for us as we like, as you know, we like hydro. There's an opportunity in Peru to try to take advantage of the small developer that have had some challenge to develop their projects. Some project there with existing PPA have run into longer development period and need a little bit of help in order to put those projects back on track. One of the challenges is to make sure that the existing EPA will be amended by the Peru government. So we're working with a local developer to make sure that this could happen. And we're busy in looking at two or three of small hydro in a range of 20 megawatt that have quite a high utilization factor. That's I guess specific to Peru. The EPA are kind of a firm energy, so the strategy to develop small hydro there is to have basically you under equip a river, so you end up having a very high utilization factor in the 85 to 95%, and then you sell 80 or 85% of your production under the EPA, and the balance you can sell it into the spot market. So that's an interesting view. So just to compare, a 20 megawatt in BC or in Canada would probably have between 40 and 50% utilization factor. So in fact, a 20 megawatt in Peru is almost a 40 megawatt in comparison into production in Canada or in BC. So like that that market and seem promising for us. USA is, even if Mr. Trump has been elected, I think that there will still be some good, interesting development and growth in the U.S. Also, the PDC and the tax incentive have been voted for the next 4 years, so I think that there will be some momentum still in the U.S. And furthermore, I think that wind and solar are quite competitive in the States and getting even more competitive as technology evolves. So I'm still positive about U.S. and we are focusing more on that market. For a change, Canada had some good news lately. Alberta last week came up with their structure of the next RFP. And it's basically a long-term contract for 20 years, which makes a lot of sense for us. So we like that structure. We're looking for opportunity to do early stage development there, or to GV with existing small developer or other developer that are in Alberta. So that's a good news for Canada. And also, we haven't spoken about it too much, but Saskatchewan has a healthy program as well. There's a 200 megawatt RFE coming, which will basically be a straight EPA with Sask Power. So we like that market as well. And we have successfully GV with a First Nation on a large wind farm that we intend to put into the RFP. So this concludes a little bit my executive summary on what we're doing, and I'll be welcoming any future questions. Thank you.
Operator?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now conduct the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press star followed by the one on your touchtone phone. We will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be pulled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset if you are using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. One moment, please, for your first question. Your first question comes from the line of Nelson Ng with RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Great, thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Hey, good morning.
Just a quick question on the French tariff system. I believe there will be like a change starting next year in terms of the fixed tariff potentially moving to a competitive system. I was just wondering whether like what your strategy there on development is and whether any of your developments are in a position to kind of lock in the feed-in tariff price by the end of the year, or are you looking to essentially participate in a potentially competitive process?
The one that we have initiated this year will not be ready for the FIT contract, although they're talking about maybe having another system where smaller project could have some kind of a FIT program for the next few years. So we'll follow and we'll track that, but there will be much smaller project. Well, much smaller. You know, project may probably under 10 megawatt or so could have a specific FIT contract. So we'll track that. It's not been finalized yet, but we were following this. Also looking definitely for joint venture with a developer that needs to speed up their process in order to meet the deadline. And eventually we would be happy to participate with our future development project in future RFP or competitive bidding. It'll be like any other places in the world. So disappointed a little bit about the end of the program of the FIT program, but excited about the future need for renewable energy in Europe or in France in particular.
I see. And then the focus is onshore wind, but I was just wondering whether you're starting to kind of poke around into the offshore wind side. I think given the price reductions we've seen in offshore wind, I think the last one was about 50 euros per megawatt hour. Like that's a lot more competitive than onshore wind in France at the moment. So I was just wondering, in terms of the feed-in tariff price, I was just wondering like whether you think there's going to be a trend towards offshore and whether that's an area you would consider going into in the future.
I think that it has been a tremendous change in terms of return and risk. And as you know, this is always what I'm trying to focus. I'm willing to take lower return if the risk are lower. Obviously, I think that the industry, the offshore wind industry, has managed to decrease the risk exposed to the developer by their experience, their feedback, and some turbine manufacturer and balance of plant supplier are able to take more risk in terms of construction and delivery time and what have you. But I think it's been extreme, the relationship between what used to make sense in terms of return and why don't... So I'm not a big fan of this change, this fast change. I would be prudent on that aspect because I think that offshore wind, although it's becoming more and more reliable and more known on cost and operation, I think there's still quite a bit more risk than managing the onshore development. So be very cautious on that aspect.
Okay. And then it looks like you're pursuing a number of developments which could take, you know, like which could have like a several years of lead time. In terms of the use of excess cash, like how do you think about it in terms of, I guess, pursuing developments, doing M&A, or like just simply reducing debt or reducing one of your credit one of your debt facilities?
I'd be very disappointed if we have to use our internal cash flow to reduce debt. I think that I'm confident on the development and M&A activities that we can still create value. One of the questions that I receive quite often when I'm talking to investors is that are we still do we still make sense? But as a company, what I see, you know, in even if spread has and equity return has been under pressure, I think that if you're looking at the long bond, I mention it quite often, the long bond are Canadian long bond 30 years are below 2%. So if we can provide anything between 8 and 10% return on a very well balanced portfolio and well managed in terms of risk and exposure, I think we're still creating something in range to 600 to 800 basis point of spread on equity. We've seen in the past when we started in the business so many years ago, the bonds were in the 8, 9, 10% range, and we were hoping to do 15, 20%. So I think that we're our business is to create a spread, and I believe that a spread between 6 to 800 basis point is not bad at all in terms of creation of value. So I think that if I can do that with our internal cash flow, my perception is that we're still creating value in deploying that capital.
Okay, thanks, Michel. Those are all my questions for now.
Your next question comes from the line of Sean Steuart with TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. Couple questions. With respect to Mexico and I guess Latin America in general, are there still opportunities for bilateral PPA negotiations with governments there, or is it all competitive at this stage?
There's some maybe some places that that might be. But I'm not aware of a really strong possibility that way. We are not seeing that often. What is still possible is bilateral with industrial company or mining company. That could be a little bit riskier, but it depends on how it's structured. But that has been quite normal or I guess active segment in Mexico, and to some degree in Peru. But the mining activities have slowed down. Mind you that the commodity is picking up in some way, so we might have bottom up on that cycle. So Peru could see the mining activities picking up. We're not a huge fan of those bilateral contract with industrial, but we could undertake some if the right conditions are there. But it's not our first pick though.
Okay. And second question, any update on the arbitration process with Hydro-Québec for your assets there?
No, it's progressing. As you may know, we have frozen the first one, waiting for the other arbitration with a third party with Hydro-Québec. And in terms of Windsor, we have only started to initiate the process. So no active meeting has been happening in the last quarter.
Okay, that's all I have for now. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Jeremy Rosenfield with Industrial Alliance. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Just a couple of questions. First, just turning back to Mexico, I think you have the agreement there to look at small hydro opportunities. I'm just wondering if there's been anything that's come out of that. I know it was a longer term opportunity, but maybe there's just some color you could provide.
Yeah, good. We're meeting with CFE next week. We have one of our engineer meeting with their team to try to focus on a couple of projects. Obviously, hydro has some challenge seeing solar and wind in the range of 3.2 and 3.5 cents. So CFE is also participating to some degree in those call with combined cycle and some capacity. So it's a little bit early in the process. I think that Mexico has been very excited with the latest result. I don't think those subasta are producing a lot of capacity. Especially if solar continue to win that much, there will be some need for managing the electricity during the day, and especially in early in the evening. The peak in Mexico is roughly around 7, 8, 9 o'clock, a little bit later than in the U.S. So obviously with solar, it could be an issue. So we're still thinking that in the mix, future mix of portfolio, especially with CFE, there will be some room for hydro development. But I think that we have to understand a little bit the dynamic with the subasta, and how many of those projects will be put in COD. So CFE is assessing their. There are alternatives, and I know by experience that they would love to keep developing hydro. It's just a matter of finding the right product for it.
Okay. Then just turning, if I turn back to BC for a second, has your outlook for potential new capacity developments in BC changed much? Some LNG, one LNG project is announced that they're going to move forward. I think there's still some talk that obviously there could be problems with Site C or timing of Site C. Do you have any perspective in terms of the BC market at this point?
Yeah, but they're not super positive in terms of big RFP. I think that BC might need some capacity. If Site C is delayed, the customer base in BC industrial base has slowed down. Although there's the Squamish small LNG that has been announced, and they said that they will use e-drive. They'll use electricity in order to compress the gas, so that's positive. We'll see how other big industrial development comes along, but I don't expect a big RFP in the next few years. I'm trying to find my English word. Except if Site C is delayed for some reason, by whatever situation, if they're really delayed, then they might need some energy or some call before that. Other than that, I think that the government, the Liberal government, are really committed to develop Site C.
And just sticking in BC, I know just in terms of weather conditions, I know it's been, from what I hear, quite a rainy Q4 so far this year. I'm just curious if you have a perspective in terms of how much of that has actually translated into production so far through the quarter.
It's big time. BC right now is in November. October was not too strong, but November is just just amazing. We're in the 200 basis. So total hydro for Canada so far is about 150% of budget, including Quebec. Wind is down around 80% for Quebec and France, and solar is up 105. So totally, we're close to over 110% of our budget for this quarter today.
So the facilities have been running well and been able to capture a lot of the rain that has been falling.
Yes, okay. But sometimes too much is too much. But now this time around, it's been okay. Although the upper Illilouette area, which is not creating any problem for our operation, but the road has been flooded in a few places because of rain and snow. Melt, but no big trouble to report. But you'll see probably if you look into the BC media that it's been very, very wet in the last few days.
Yep, that's what I hear. Okay, thank you, Michelle.
Pleasure.
Your next question comes from the line of Robert Catelli with CIBC World Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the very detailed update on your development by market. I was wondering if you could spend a little bit more time on the U.S. Maybe you can start by detailing how much of your development portfolio is actually in the U.S. market, and then second, just talk about what President-elect Trump might mean for the U.S. market in terms of how renewables develop. And I know it's a little bit speculative at this point, but given what he's said in this platform, how do you see the U.S. market evolving?
Well, it's not a good news having him elected for our industry. But like I said, there's a lot of initiative that lies with the states. I think that the states are more progressive in many ways and more active. Also, if he looks into the free market, I think that the coal has not been killed by renewable energy. It has been killed lately by natural gas price. I don't think that that trend will change. And also, I think that renewable energy is becoming, like I said at the beginning, more and more competitive. And after the numbers I've shown you for Mexico, that market doesn't have any tax advantage. And they were below 4 cents. So I think that by itself, renewable energy can compete and will compete. And also the tax advantage has been voted for the next 4 to 5 years. I doubt that they would change that, although everything is possible, I guess, with Mr. Trump. But I think that there will still a momentum in the U.S. And for a Canadian perspective, I would say that if you take out all those tax credit that can only be taken by an American company, actually I'd be happier to have less opportunity, but I feel that a Canadian company could be more competitive without PTC and ITC in the States. So maybe I'm wrong, it's wishful thinking, but to be honest, if they wouldn't have those tax subsidies that in my mind are basically a trade barrier compared to what we can do as Canadian company, I think that we could see a little bit more opportunities, especially if those weren't there. I think that BC Hydro or Hydro-Quebec would have a lot more opportunity to sell electricity in the Northeast and the Northwest. So I'm not too pessimistic about the new elect president. I think that we'll be able to find future development. One thing we have realized to some degree is that we were looking to partner with local individual or small companies, still active to try to do a joint venture and a good fit, but we have decided also to put our feet on the ground and develop our own project. Right now, there's Alabama that has an RFP for 500 megawatt of solar. So we decided to kick the tire there and have some project being secured, some land being secured, and we'll see. I think that we've learned a lot in the Mexico market by actually participating in subasta and RFP. So this is our intention for the next year, is to be on the ground in the U.S. and participate in project and learn the other way, be on the ground, and maybe we'll make some mistake, but I think that we'll learn a lot, and we'll be in a better position to participate in future project in the States.
Okay. So when you talk about the Alberta power market, you look at the changes that they're making there. Still, there's quite a bit that's undecided and unknown. But with what you know about the structure as they proposed it, is that enough to give you confidence to bid into that market, given the market's recent history? Maybe another way to look at it, if you were bidding on a contract for difference, do you have any willingness to take on energy pricing risk in order to meet your targeted returns?
You mean for Alberta?
Yeah.
Well, obviously, we are not the most aggressive company in terms of spot market. I've been surprised to see some asset in the U.S. Being sold on merchant basis at prices that defy my comprehension. It's something that we have to be, I guess, open to the idea at some degree, but with the right price. I think that some people are very bullish on future prices, but I'm humble versus the technology and the ability of the industry and the new technology to improve prices and efficiency. So I have to be careful on that aspect. There's one positive aspect: if carbon tax gets in and at the right price, then obviously price of energy could see some strength in them. But the way technology is evolving for shale gas and shale oil, these guys have been showing some very resilience in terms of finding ways to lower their costs all the time. So I'm very cautious on that aspect, and hence I like maybe sometimes take maybe a little bit lower return on firm contract than hoping to have a better return on something I don't control at all.
That's a very helpful answer. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Your next question comes from the line of Ben Pham with BMO. Your line is open.
Thank you. A question on France. The 60% long-term average, can you comment on what conditions you saw that was driving that? It's typically don't see wind underperform by that much. That's more of a hydro story. And was that number or underperformance, is that in the range of outcomes you may have looked at when you first acquired the French portfolio?
I think it's fairly extreme. What we've done is that we obviously it's our first investment in France, and the board and myself were saying, hey, are we getting it wrong? So our expert in wind made a good study on the correlation between our production and the existing wind prevailing in those area, and its availability was there. The machine was were just okay. There's no bugs. Just the wind was not there for the last two quarters. Mind you that the first quarter, which we're not reporting because we only acquired the assets in the Q2, was over the long-term average. So as a whole, they're just slightly below on a year-to-date basis. It just happened that we bought it at the early Q2, and we are reporting two really bad quarter. And I'm sad to report also that October and November, October has seen a little bit more pickup, but November so far is still weak. So we're not concerned yet on the win in France. I think it's just a blurt in the long-term average. I think that all the experts in wind are reassuring me that this is not a big concern. I think we should be focusing on long-term averages, and I guess that wind will come back in France.
Okay, so I mean the recent data points, even though it's only a few data points, it doesn't result you in causing maybe a slowdown in how you think about capital in France versus maybe some other areas like Peru?
Well, I think that France has some very, well, mind you that whenever we have been looking in a lot of M&A, and a lot of them, we had reduced the long-term forecast in our own due diligence. Some seller or vendor had pushed back and you know, we only made one acquisition, so it shows you that I think we're diligent in the wind study that we're doing. But again, you know, we've been in that business for so long, we've seen some downturn, and I strongly believe that long-term average is what you have to focus. Mind you, that you have to have liquidity on the side. If there's a few bad quarters and those are project finance, so you have to have the ability to have hydrology or wind reserve in order to meet your covenant. But other than that, I'm still a firm believer of long-term investment, and I obviously am happy when we have a good quarter, and I'm sad when we don't have a good quarter, but our thesis of investment is on the long-term basis.
Okay. And you mentioned some optimism on small M&A in your comments, Michel. Is that, when you think about size and magnitude, is that more of sort of maybe Magpie type of acquisitions, or maybe a little bit bigger like your recent French one?
Well, in the French one was nice, was a nice size, 80 something megawatt, and with E.ON it was up to, you know, 130 megawatts, so that was a fair bunch. But we're seeing the 20, 30 megawatt wind farms that are for sale in France. It's small, but we're trying to have a process where it would not be too cumbersome to do these type of approach. And we have already made the structure with Desjardins in French, and I think that structure is efficient both in terms of enhancing our return and it's efficient also in tax wise. As you remember, we're willing to take the hedge on the long-term hedge on the euro, and that still provides a healthy 50 basis point positive return in Canadian dollar. It takes a little bit of place on our balance sheet, but I think we can manage. So at the end of the day, buying these things, if we are able to be consistent and disciplined in the long-term average win, as you're mentioning, I think we can make a decent return on those facility without too much risk exposure. So I like that approach.
And maybe my last question, more of a clarification, the 8 to 10% returns you highlighted. Do you guys calculate that on a full cycle basis where you're including from conception some of the pre-development costs and then and on the benefits some maybe some of the FX edges as you put that in?
For each project, yeah. What I'm mentioning 8 to 10 is those that we could make acquisition. I'm hoping and still hoping that we can manage to do a little bit better sometimes when we have our own development. Mind you that in some places like Mexico, that can be challenged. So it's sometimes it's crazy. You know, you can buy in France some existing asset with the same type of return that you would get into a full development cycle in some other market. So that's why we're interested in the small M&A, the way we're doing it in joint venture and tax efficiency, and focusing on small deal that can create value. So I'm always very focused on that type of approach of risk profile. And although we love to develop, we love to permits and build, but when there's opportunity to create as much value with less time and less risk exposure, I'm all in to take that route. If for some reason the market is a little bit crazy, we want to be disciplined.
Okay, so you do include the pre-development cost, right? It's not just the year one commissioning to terminal value, right?
No.
Oh, you don't.
We do it the old way. We okay. Whenever we start a project, Jean can assess. We track that money and we put it against any future return.
Okay, got it. Okay, thanks, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions at this time, please press the star followed by the 1. As a reminder, if you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. Your next question comes from the line of Rupert Merer with National Bank Financial. Please go ahead.
Good morning. This is Stephen Hong, filling on behalf of Rupert Merer.
Hello.
Most of my question has been answered, but just want to follow up on the French market. Can you give us a bit more color on how Innergex can stay maybe more competitive in France with contract for differences?
Well, the same as we competitive anywhere else. I think that we can be nimble. We have good relationship with turbine manufacturer, and those are not. I think the French market will be competitive, but. It's hard to make a huge wind farm in France. It could happen, but most of them will be between 20 to 80, 85 megawatt is a big wind farm in France. So I think that it's just a little bit less crowded. I think that Mexico has brought the world to Mexico, and the big corporation would love to see those 200, 400 megawatt. Sometimes in the U.S. where you see those big wind farm or solar farm being developed, those are very, very competitive at the end of the day. This is not necessarily our market. I'm not saying that I will never participate in trying to develop a big wind farm, but I think that for us, we're not big, and 50 megawatts is still very attractive for us, and still can make a difference at the bottom line. So I think that by focusing and making sure that we have an efficient structure and an efficient team to build and develop project, I don't see why we wouldn't be competitive. Our cost of capital is fairly similar to many of the player in terms of development, and we're using project finance. Project finance, you would put in a French development, you would put 70%, 75% of project finance. So you're competing only with 25% equity. I don't think our cost of equity is that bad, so I don't see why we wouldn't be competitive in that market at all.
Okay, thank you. Great. I leave it there. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Ms. Benouillan, there are no further questions at this time.
Thank you, everyone. We appreciate this opportunity to provide an update about our company. Please do not hesitate to contact us if you have any other questions. Merci à tous. Nous vous apprécions cette occasion de faire une mise à jour de nos activités. N'hésitez pas à communiquer avec nous si vous avez d'autres questions.
Merci beaucoup.
Au revoir.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our conference call. Please note that a replay of the conference call will be available on the Innergex website. The press release, financial statements, and the management's discussion and analysis are also available on the Innergex website at www.innergex.com in the investors section. Thank you. You may now disconnect your lines.